Lon Simmons' 90th birthday yesterday, and we're celebrating a lot of the stories about Lon that I'm getting a lot of nice emails and texts about. And now, one of the pleasures that Patrick and I have every weekend is to join Bruce Jenkins and talk with him. So it's now time to look through the window of baseball with Bruce Jenkins, brought to you by Marvin Windows and Doors and Truett & White, the professional builder's choice. Bruce, how are you?
Hey, Bruce.
Hey, Will. How you guys doing?
Very well. And you're almost out of the house, aren't you?
I actually made a trip down to the post office today. It was huge. Huge trip.
Good. Bruce has been recuperating from foot surgery for about 6 weeks now, so I'm glad that we could brighten your day a little bit. But yesterday was Lon's 90th birthday. He's going to come by here, Mario Alioto tells me, in just a little while. I'd love to get your thoughts about Lon. And people have been texting in and emailing me about, working with Russ, the 62 playoff, the great moments of Mays, McCovey, and Marichal's career, the 49ers. I mean, you look at, they say, the Mount Rushmore of San Francisco Bay Area broadcasters. He's the leading guy.
Yeah, the 49ers stuff is really prominent, and not so much for this show, but I don't think anyone should ever forget how great he was. Some of his calls are just classic. They hold up through time. They show up on NFL films, and they're just absolute treasures. But the way I always remember Lon is in 1966, I left Southern California to come up here and go to Cal, and of course I'd been raised by Vin Scully, which is that's awfully august company, you might say, and he was my standard for broadcasting. And all of a sudden I'm up here, I'm listening to the Giants games, and I knew I was going to be a sports writer, and I was kind of getting away from being a fan anyway. And it didn't take me that long to disassociate myself from the Dodgers, but missing Vin Scully was another thing. But it wasn't long before Russ and Lon, the two of them, absolutely reeled me in. That's one thing I didn't get from Vin, because he worked with Terry Doggett, who was just kind of a straight man. It was really nothing special at all. But Russ and Lon were absolutely priceless together. And I'm thinking, God, this is just so much fun. These guys are so good. And it just made it easier just from a baseball standpoint, letting go of what I was so used to.
But what about Lon's style? We talked about it, and he had the wit, which he still has. When I'm ready, when he shows up, I'm ready. Believe me, you got to ask your questions carefully. The wit is just unbelievable.
I think no matter what anyone says at any time, Lon's first instinct is to come back with something funny.
Yes.
And boy, that is really not easy. But he's a natural humorist. Funny stuff comes to him naturally, and. It's just amazing, that he's still around. We're so lucky to have him around at the age of 90. But what I always also remember, I think it was 1976 when he worked with Al Michaels in the Giants broadcast, and those guys were hilarious. I mean, there'd be times where they'd just be outright laughing, just cracking each other up. It was a terrible team, and they knew it, and they knew the fans knew it, and there was no reason to pretend that this team was a juggernaut, and they had a lot of fun with it, and of course it was all in very good taste, too. I mean, it wasn't like they were ripping players up and down, but it was really a very special year.
Mitch Jurisich was on with us earlier, Bruce, and said that Lon used to be a boxer. So, I mean, what a colorful life he's led, huh?
Yeah, and he was a very good pitcher, and he's got great stories about, toiling in the minor leagues. And, yeah, he's had a wonderful, wonderful life. What a great man. I'm sorry I'm going to be missing him at the park, as I'm still a little bit not quite ready to get out there yet.
Well, out of the current Giants broadcasters, who'd be the most likely to have had a boxing past? Are we going Kahuna?
I got to be Kruko. Kruko was a
good
scrapper.
One. Yeah, definitely.
His dad was a cop, and Mike was always ready to go if he had to.
Yeah, definitely.
What about Dwayne as sort of a featherweight?
I wouldn't put Dwayne down either. I'd probably put him number two on the list.
Yeah, he'd be a jabber, right?
Yeah, sure.
He'd be dancing, jabbing. Yeah, maybe a welterweight. I'll give him a welterweight.
Right. Yeah, I'll tell you, Dwayne Kuiper, I covered him in the late 70s, and he was a really great athlete. He was incredibly agile. He could jump. He was playing second base, getting out of the guy's way. He could jump way off the ground, and he was an acrobat. He really was. He was really fun to watch in his early days.
Wow, very good. Bruce Jenkins, of course, joins us. All right, your take on the All-Star game, and I know you wrote a lot about Cespedes, and we predicted he'd win the Home Run Derby. I mean, he's the most powerful guy in baseball. But what was your just general take of the couple of days?
Well, the Home Run Derby. I was constantly on alert with the mute button with Chris Berman in the backs. I mean, you just can't believe he still does that every 5 minutes or less. But I was basically watching only Cespedes and Bryce Harper, like, the whole way. I really wasn't interested in too much else that was going on. It's just, it's too long, and it's not a compelling start to finish. It just isn't. But when a guy like Cespedes gets in there, it's really special. It reminded me of, you know, McGuire and Cal Ripken, some of the, you know, Josh Hamilton in the past events. And, you know, Harper with his dad pitching to him, throwing cut fastballs low and in. That was fascinating. That was great. The game itself, I always like the game. It always sounds better, it seems like, in recent years than it actually turns out to be. I mean, you look at that American League lineup and you go, oh, God, this is going to be unbelievable. You know, there are some great little moments, really all overshadowed by Mariano Rivera. But the game was not, it was not a good game. It was not a compelling game. Jim Leland did a pretty good job of getting guys a little extra ABs, but still everybody, you know, came out of the game and everybody had to play. And that's when it ceases to be an authentic game, and that takes a lot away from it.
Boy, it was. Lon is going to join us here, Bruce, in just a couple of seconds, so I want you to have a chance to talk to him too.
Oh, excellent.
You know, but it's, you know, there's so many things that have come up. Talking that he started the USF. I didn't realize that.
Somebody's got to write down the man's entire history athletically and in broadcasting. I'm sure there's some gems in there that no one's really aware of.
Well, today's the anniversary of Gaylord Perry's home run, and the same day the man walked on the moon. Remember that? Alvin Dark said a man will walk on the moon before Perry will hit a home run, and Neil Armstrong did, and so did Perry.
Yeah.
That was great. All right, stay with us, Bruce. It's okay. All right. Fans, I want to introduce the Hall of Fame broadcaster, Lon Simmons.
There you go.
Celebrating the 90th birthday yesterday. And what a pleasure. All right. Lon, how are you? Nice to see you today.
Well, very good. I'm living from breakfast to lunch and lunch to dinner. I don't make reservations ahead of time.
Right. Now, Bruce Jenkins is on with us. You know Bruce well.
Oh, yeah, Bruce.
So go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, I was going to ask Lon what he's having for dinner, but I know that's jumping way, way ahead of time. I don't want to do that. But Lon, how the heck did they get you out of Hawaii for this? How much did you got to pay to get out of there?
Well, I get out easier if the waves aren't up to 20 feet. I don't want to go out anyway. So then I come over here.
Yeah. You're the special events kind of guy always. Yeah.
Bruce, you talked about the '60s, and I want to ask you this, Lon. In '62. That comeback, you know, people forget about how far out the Giants were. And as you called Russ Hodges the fat man, and the fat man said they're going to make this thing happen in 62. It's a great story.
Oh, yeah. Well, Russ wrote in his book that he was an awful lot smarter than the rest of us. He knew it was going to happen. He was just as scared as we were.
I know, and it went right down to the last day.
Well, sure it did. And the thing that was interesting about it is the final weekend. The Giants had to play Houston three games, and the Dodgers were playing
the Cardinals.
Yeah.
They didn't score a run against the Cardinals, but we didn't know that to begin with. And on Friday, the game was rained out. Yeah. So the Giants had a doubleheader on Saturday, and they split the doubleheader. And Russ and I were going out to a gathering that night we were looking forward to, and they – KSFO said, no, you're going to recreate the game from Los Angeles. Yeah. So we had to go in, and we think, well, the Dodgers are going to win, and we're just going to be there like at the funeral. Well, we went in and did the recreation, and the Dodgers got shut out again.
Wow.
So that meant it was Sunday when it was going to happen. I had to do the 49er game.
Right. Oh.
Bill King worked with Russ on the broadcast. So I wore earphones and listened to their broadcast while I was broadcasting the 49er game. And they were playing Minnesota. And when Mays hit his home run, Minnesota was in the huddle. And they were just coming out. And this tremendous roar goes back. And they stopped like, my God, are these guys that good of football fans here? Well, everybody had transistors at Kezar listening to the Giant game. And the Giants won it. And then shut out the Dodgers in the first game of the playoffs. Billy Pierce winning again at Candlestick Park.
Now, you were on the air for the last out, which we heard last night at 62. How did that work out with you and Russ?
Well, Russ and I worked back and forth on see, Channel 2 was carrying the
okay.
telecast,
okay.
and KSFO, the radio broadcast. Well, I did the first three and the last three on the radio, and Russ did the opposite and did the play-by-play on the TV. But when I went over to do the fourth, fifth, and sixth, the Giants were behind. And so Russ and I never, if we said something to somebody, if we were at a party or any place, if we said, look, we got to do this, well, the other guy didn't question it. He just went. So I can't remember which half of the inning it was, but after that half inning, I said, we're behind. And I said, I'm jinxing him being on TV. Yeah. So I ran over and I said, Russ, go do TV. So he didn't say anything. He went and finished the game up on TV. Then we won. So he said, don't you do that again or let anybody know you do it, because then they're not going to ever let you broadcast the last inning.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Lon, speaking of jinxes, when you were on the air and a guy had a no-hitter going, especially if he was a Giants pitcher, had a no-hitter going, would you say those words?
We kept quiet about it, but we'd make enough sly comments that people knew what was happening.
So you honored the tradition of not saying the words no-hitter.
Yeah,
I always found that interesting,
Well, the no-hitter that was a special, almost a no-hitter, was on July 19th, 1960, at Candlestick Park, and it was the first time that Marichal was going to pitch.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And he went six innings without giving up a hit, and so Russ told me, all right, I was taking over the seventh. He said, you're going to stay on the rest of the game, and I said, I didn't question him then, but I asked him later. He said, well, it's your birthday, and you haven't had a no-hitter in the major leagues, so you are going to do this one.
Wow.
And that's the way Russ was, and he taught me. I felt that same way if I was with a young announcer later on.
Yeah.
I remember Wayne Hagen told a story about that.
If there was something big coming up, I was already where I was going to be.
Ooh.
They were looking to go someplace, and so let them do it. That was what Russ taught me, and he... But then Clay Dalrymple got the single, and I told Marichal later on, I said, geez, that's really something. Here you are, and you just got to get Clay Dalrymple out, and what do? You lose the no-hitter that I was going to get to broadcast for.
You know, Bruce Jenkins with us, the great Lon Simmons is here, of course, Patrick and myself.
Oh, that's a great Bruce Jenkins.
And believe me, we love Bruce. He's the best. But Mays, McCovey, Cepeda, Marichal, the teams you covered. And as I tell fans, and you know what Dwayne and Mike said last night, the standard that you and Russ set for the Bay Area baseball is something that everyone strives to get to. Did you realize that when you were doing these games, that they were so special?
At the time, we didn't realize anything other than we had a bunch of great players. But looking back through my career and through the years I've been around, the Bay Area has been really lucky to have the number of stars they've had in all the baseball, football, basketball, things like that. They've had tremendous representatives on the field. And these crowds that come out here, they show that they enjoy it.
Isn't that amazing? Pat, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to ask Lon, this morning in the Chronicle, Ron Krawcheck put his Rushmore of great 49ers and Giants, and you have Mays, McCovey, Bonds, and Posey. And what do you think about this current crop of Giants and how they match up?
Well, they match up. Sure they do. And they're going to match up as the years go along. Look at Posey. Here's a guy that's already claimed the Hall of Fame. All he does, he just can't stumble, that's all. But it's amazing to watch this team. And I talked to the guys yesterday. I talked to Crawford and to Belt. And I said to Belt, I said, hey, if you make out, I said, don't get down on yourself. I said, you can get down on yourself when you make out at a ball in the dirt. But not, I said, you're going to hit. You guys are going to, look what you did last year. You can do it again this year. You just got to go ahead and not worry about what's past. And so they seem to me as being pretty confident and loose and happy. And they were certainly nice to me. So if you can go that far, you have to be a pretty good guy.
Yes, you do. Absolutely. Bruce, go ahead if you'd like to ask.
That's what makes this juncture of the season right now so interesting, because you're looking at a bunch of guys who have done it, and they've had their confidence pretty well shaken. And this is, things seem so fragile, but they've got it in them to do it, and they just might. And they probably doesn't hurt to hear a few words like that from a guy who's been around.
Well, they have to realize what they're doing, what they're playing. That it's a game where you're a champion if you do well a third of the time.
Yeah.
So just go out and look at last night's game. Everybody's talking about what a great game it was. It was a great game because of the way that kid pitched. And the Giants still only scored 2 runs.
That's right. Yeah.
Now that they could have lost 3-2.
Yep.
In fact, there were some people on base, the bases loaded, in that inning.
Yeah.
And the best hitter up,
Goldschmidt,
yeah. The worst possible spot you'd want to be in if you were a pitcher, and they got him out.
Yeah.
So this is as you look back through the playoffs, when the playoffs started last year, the first 2 games against Cincinnati. The Giants didn't look like they were a playoff team.
No,
one
not
of the
at
games
all.
They got beat 9-0, didn't they?
Yeah, well, that was the second game was 9-0.
So you lose two, you lose two, and don't play very well. Then they get one hit in the third game and win. But they just kept together and they played, and then all of a sudden there was this thing where they were the best fielding team that's ever been invented.
Yeah.
And look at what they did last night. Look at the outfield, what they did.
Yeah.
Each outfielder made a heck of a catch.
That's right. Yeah. How about Tanaka's catch? That was something else.
Yeah.
Lon, we got a few people that called in with questions for. I don't know if you heard it driving in with Mario and your brother Bob, but
were you driving in with them?
No,
I thought I was.
Were you driving? I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know where I was, but I think I'm here. But someone said that you were a boxer and the mob tried to get you to fix a fight.
Down in Los Angeles, the Olympic Stadium there. It was a big boxing venue, and they used to have a people were going crazy going to the fights there. Well, the unfortunate thing is there was a group of underworld guys who were betting on the games and wanted to make sure that their bets went the right way. And so I had a few fights, and I was sitting in the dressing room this one night, and this guy comes in, and he said, look, pal, we're giving you $5,000 to throw the fight. And I said, oh, well, doesn't sound bad. And he said, well, throw it in the third round. And I said, oh, I can't take it. I've never gone that far before.
How about a nice quick one about 30 seconds in?
Very good. Very good. Hey, also someone called in about you worked at USF, and someone was the ball boy, and they got you tickets. He got you tickets to the Osmonds or something, and Jack Traeger or something like that. And
no,
did you work at USF, though?
Well, I worked at USF. I did basketball for 2 years of that. And that was after
Russell.
Yeah. But it was they should have won the national championship that year.
Wow.
But Portland come down and beat him with
Baylor.
The guy that went to Lakers.
Not Elgin Baylor, was it?
Elgin
Baylor. Boy, good knowledge, Marty.
Attaboy, Marty.
Elgin Baylor was said an All-American game, and then the USF missed 2 free throws at the end that could have won. But Kentucky then took apart Portland, because Portland played the same type of game they did. USF, we had gone to Louisville and beaten Kentucky handily using the style of play that that U.S. had, the deliberate play. And had they played them, I think they'd have beaten them again.
Well,
but nobody was going to beat him at their game.
So someone called in also said, Bruce mentioned it earlier, 2 great years working with Al Michaels, and you guys had
one great year.
One great year.
Yeah. One not so great year.
Yeah. Well, no. So see, what happened is when my wife became ill, I told the Giants that I was going to have to leave. I was trying to take care of her. And so I told him that I couldn't make it, and that I was going to have to leave. So they went to get Al Michaels, who was Cincinnati. He had a year left on his contract, and Cincinnati wouldn't let him go. So the Giants said that I had to stay. Casey said I had to stay. So I stayed the rest of that year. That just had maybe 2 months because she got ill in July, and so I got through with that. But Michaels, now in 73, couldn't come over to take because he had to stay at Cincinnati. Well, my wife died the first day of spring training, and so I said, "Well, I might as well do that as sit around and suffer." So I agreed to do the 73 season, which I did. And then at the end of the 73 season, I left, and Michaels came over and did 74 and 75. And I had some things, financial things going when I quit there. I just still did the 49er game. But everything disappeared about January of 76. I was completely broke. I was living in Palm Springs. I had the equity in a house. And I was thinking, I said, "Do you need the money today?" And I said, "No." "Okay, well, then don't worry about it." Well, about 3 days later, I got a call from Bill Shaw, who had come back to take over KSFO again as general manager. And he called and said that team was staying in San Francisco, and they wanted me to come and broadcast with Michael.
Yeah.
So I said, "Okay, I'll come and broadcast with Michaels, but I've got to come up and we have dinner with Michaels, and I tell him that I'm not coming back as a threat. I'm willing to be the number two broadcaster, and we'll just go along and do it that way."
What fun!
And that's the way I felt about it. But it was amazing how that thing came through just when I needed it. And so I came back. Then Michaels was always headed for the big time. And I always, when I got to San Francisco, I felt that was as far as my ability would take me, and it's as far as I wanted to be. And sometimes you have to realize how much you can do rather than how much you want to do.
Yeah.
And I thought how much I could do would be accomplished in San Francisco, not being a big TV star or something. And Michaels was definitely destined to be a star on TV. He was that good. So anyway, he left, and then Joe Angel and I did a couple of years together. And then the team moved from USF, from KSFO over to
KNBR. Wow.
Yeah, and they didn't want any part of me.
Okay. Another good decision by KNBR, right?
So they
boy, they knew their stuff, didn't they?
Yeah, another good decision. But how did you come up with "Tell It Goodbye"?
I have no idea. All I know is that Russ said, "Bye bye, baby," and I remember thinking that, okay, I should probably use some, because Russ told me the story of why he used it, that a lot of people, including ladies who were at home doing the ironing, weren't not listening that closely, but they had the game on, and they were seeing what was happening. And so he said, "I decided I'd say bye bye, baby." And if I did, they knew that the Giants had done something good, and so that was the clue. So, which worked out fine, and so that's what I decided that I'd do that, and I wanted to do something close, but I didn't want to say the same thing.
Right, boy, what a great call!
Cool.
I mean, you just hear it. Know exactly. But you did it for Mays, and look at how many home runs.
A lot of people that disagree with doing that type of call.
Hey, Lon, what was the bye-bye baby bonanza?
Oh, that was the thing. We had an inning, and they still have it here, where they have a grand slam.
Sure,
yeah.
The person that name is picked wins on the grand slam. So that was, they called it the bye-bye baby bonanza, because I think the thing had gone for a period of time without a grand slam, which naturally it's going to do, but when he hit that, I don't know why I thought of that immediately, but it was the inning. And
when Mays hit his 600th?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the bye-bye baby bonanza inning.
Right.
So what could I do but mention it?
It's a great guy. I love the call.
Yeah.
It's great. Today is also the anniversary of Gaylord Perry's home run. And this is with the man walking on the moon, and Alvin Dark said, is that true? Is all that true?
Yeah, I think so. Because they walked on the moon on the 20th, right? Because it's the day after my birthday.
Right.
And Gaylord was Gaylord was funny. He was one of the toughest competitors I know. He was the easiest one to give the ball to and the toughest one to take it away from. But Gaylord was intense about winning. He thought winning was a whole lot better than losing. And incidentally, you know, he had 303 complete games with 314 victories.
Oh, my God.
Now, think about 300. Yeah. And Marichal had more complete games than he had victories.
That's right.
So, in those days, those guys went out there and they thought you pitched 9 innings, or in Marichal's case, you pitched 16 innings.
That's right. Boy, how about that?
But Gaylord, we had a little second baseman who lisped, and he played sometimes, and so we played a game, and he made an error behind Gaylord.
Uh-oh.
And so the next day, I went to him, and I said, did Gaylord get upset when you made that error? And he said, he screamed at me. And that's the way it was. That's the way Gaylord thought he had to pitch perfectly, and he thought the players had to. And he wasn't mean about it. He just thought that's the way you're supposed to play the game.
Well in 2 weeks, maybe another 10 days, we've got the McCovey debut, the 4-for-4 of Robin Roberts. What do you think of that?
Well, that's good. And, you know, when I went back to the Hall of Fame and visited with all the Hall of Fame, Robin Roberts was there. And I was in conversation with him, and people brought up and Robert says, well, nobody says what happened the next time. And I said, well, I'll tell you what happened the next time. You pitched a one-hitter, and he did.
Yeah.
He beat the Giants and gave up only one hit.
Wow,
McCovey, watching him in spring training, there are two people I watched in spring training that I really realized were going to be stars. McCovey was one. And the guy that probably impressed me the most, I have a friend, Jim Stockwell, who lives in Hawaii, and I called him that night and I said, I've just seen somebody that's going to pitch a no-hitter every game. And he said, a kid that's out here that they can't touch, and that was Tim Lincecum.
Oh, right.
Ah.
And I never saw a pitcher with that much stuff before.
Really?
And I can't understand where he lost it. I hope he has it back, because I've rooted for him so hard that I've sweated sometimes.
Okay.
Because I want him to win for the ball club, and I want him to win for himself.
Yeah.
And the last two outings that he had were pretty good. And what about the outings, the difference that he did in the relief as opposed to the starting in the playoffs? So here's somebody that obviously had to lose something. I'll tell you a story about how people felt. And Joe Torre, who was a good friend of mine, was managing the Dodgers. And the Giants opened against the Dodgers. And Lincecum, Pittsman, the game was delayed by an hour by rain. And so when the Dodgers came here, Lincecum wasn't scheduled to work. And I was talking with Joe, and he said, boy, thank goodness we don't have to face that guy. He says he was throwing 98 miles an hour when that game started. He said there was over an hour delay. He came back, and we said, great. And we said, yeah, great. He was still throwing 98 miles an hour. So he impressed everybody. And were they number of times they swung and missed?
29.
They used to swing and miss an awful lot when he threw that changeup or whatever he wanted to call it. And so there was something that was going on that was making things go bad for him.
Wow.
And the funny part, the Giants didn't play their best defense behind him either.
Yeah,
it's true.
So the fact that he did, I hope that he's back in place, because I've rooted for some players. Another one I root for is down in Fresno,
Brett Pill.
Here's a guy who has missed 30 games with them and still leading the league in RBI. But they just can't find a place where they think they can play him. But he's an excellent. He's as good a first baseman as Belt. They're both exceptional. So I just wish that he gets with a team where he can play, because he's up 28, 29 years old now, he's got to find a place to roost where he can play, because he can play every day. He can't come and sit on the bench and know that if he makes out, he's probably going to go back down again.
Boy, we've got this season has a long way to go. A long way to go.
A lot of things will be done. A lot of things will be seen, and it's going to depend on how these players react to a loss.
Yeah.
If they're going to win, they got used to getting the wins because things happened their way. Well, there are going to be some losses that are going to be tough. They got a tough road. What are they, 8 or 9 games behind? 8 games behind 500?
They're 5.
7
they're
under 500.
7 under 500. 5 in the loss column.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So so they're down that far. And now it means you've got to win that many games just to get to 500.
Yeah.
Well, fortunately, the ones that are ahead of them aren't getting that fast at it. They're only Arizona being ahead.
Yeah.
So they've got a job on their hand, but I think they can do it if they just tell themselves. Get Pence out there to give them
the reverend.
Yeah. The reverend seeds.
All right, folks, happy birthday to Lon Simmons.
Thank you.
The Hall of Famer. Lon, thank you so much. Thanks. And like I always say to you, Lon, it's great to see you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You know that.
It's great to hear you.
I know. Thank you. Thank you. All right.
Happy birthday,
Bruce,
Lon.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bruce. Well, thank you.
All right. That's Lon Simmons, folks.
Very good.
Hall of Famer right here. All right.